Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Tuesday, May 17th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free on the Internet through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. The book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. It's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. It's also a tool I can use to turn any negative emotional experience that I run into or create for myself into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. I do that by taking 100% responsibility for the emotions that I create, and I do that by learning the process within me that creates those emotional experiences. And once I have access to that process, I realize how I'm doing it. Then when I unwittingly engaged in a process that creates an experience I don't like, now I know how to undo it. Now I know how to access at a cause level what's the dynamic of thought and goal and memory and trauma energy within me that's creating the experience I'm having in each moment. Also on that webpage, you can click a link and download the actual worksheet process itself, absolutely free. It's a PDF file. Download it. Print it off and copy it as often as you'd like. Use it over and over again, absolutely free. Also, there's a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one that you can tap into and listen to over and over again, where people have called in and either been stepped through that worksheet process or given powerful testimonials about how the actual use of that process in their lives has been beneficial. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we're hopeful that people will do that soon and often, because the application of this tool usually improves people's lives and life experience day to day, moment to moment. It also frequently stimulates comments, questions, answers, testimonials, and if you have any of those to share with us, we encourage you to give us a call at 563-999-3581. and press 1, or send us an email. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, and or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. And that's an especially useful resource if you're only able to listen to this show through the archives. You can send us an email. When we get your comment, your question, your answer, or your testimonial, we will address it on the internet show, and then as time allows, send you a note letting you know what day and time we addressed your comment or question. So feel free to do that. As I probably don't mention it often enough, but even when I'm going through a monologue, I encourage people, if they have a question about the current monologue or anything that they've heard in the last 11 plus years of this show being run 5 days a week, feel free to give us a call at 563-999-3581 and press 1 on your phone. And either instantly when I see the hand come up or when it's a good time in the monologue to have a respite, I will turn on your microphone and announce you by your area code. Today being a Tuesday, it's another time when we have a support group that's available absolutely free for people to join us wherever they are. If you have access to the internet, you can join us absolutely free for a Mindshifter support group that runs from 6:30 to 9 p.m. on Tuesday nights and Thursday nights. And all the information you need to join us on the Zoom call is available at mindshiftersacademy.org website, and there's a separate page for the login information for Tuesday and a separate one for Thursday. So please feel free to join us and or pass that information along to somebody you think might be interested. One of the things that I'm going to do in tonight's support group is offer people the opportunity to listen to an interview between Wayne Dyer and Abraham Hicks. And I forget exactly when that happened, but it might have been as far back as 2013. But in Anaheim, California, the two of them sat down for the first time ever. And it created a video that I had a copy of. I had a DVD of it, and I watched it and showed it to the support group one evening a number of years ago, and I lost track of it, or I loaned it to somebody and never got it back. So now it's back in my library. And there was another something that sparked this for me was there's an Abraham quote that when I read it recently, it reminded me of how close it is to the work we're doing as we're reading The Way of Mastery. And here's the quote: "You never get it done, and you cannot get it wrong. Life is supposed to be fun. You are a creator. You are a focusing mechanism, and you're here in an environment that is very conducive to that. When you get hold of an idea, play it out for the pleasure of it. If you're doing it for any other reason, then you're not connecting to your source energy." And when I read that, it reminded me of how this book talks about so often in the first five or six lessons, that you are intended, use this creative force of mind energy the same way your creator does, playfully, joyfully, with childlike curiosity and abandon. And The reason, in my humble opinion, the reason more people don't do that is because they've been told differently. They've been told life is hard. You have to work hard, and only if you work hard and you're lucky will it pay off and will you get decent results. We've been told that the most important thing is our physical body and our physical possessions, and we have not been coached or counseled or, it's another good word for that, introduced to the aspect that there's an entirely different realm of our mental emotional functioning other than the intellectual realm, and that is our greatest gift. Einstein talked about it as, we're here as human beings on this planet, and we've been given a precious gift, which is the intuitive mind, the creative mind, the mind that goes beyond the intellect and logical reasoning. And that's a precious gift we've been given. And we've also been given a faithful servant, which is the conscious logical mind. And yet, great difficulties are upon us because we live in a culture that has forgotten the precious gift of the intuitive mind and elevated the conscious logical mind, the intellect, the ego, to the level of master. And that's exactly what the Way of Mastery was talking about in the first lesson, where it says, listen, please listen. The way of the heart is not the way of the intellect. Your intellect was meant to be a very simple servant, tool, an adjunct, something to be brought out for specific situations and then put away when you're done with it. And that wisdom cuts across many different cultures and many different spiritual teachings, and there it is. In the, at least my eye and ear picks it up in this quote from Abraham that says, you never get it done and you cannot get it wrong. Life is supposed to be fun. You are a creator. You are a focusing mechanism for that creative energy. And you're here in an environment that's very conducive to you doing just that. Choose again. Choose a different focus for your creative energy, your mind energy. And when you get a hold of an idea, play with it. Play it out just for the pleasure of it. And if you're doing it for any other reason, if you create any negativity, if you create any frustration or sadness or fear or guilt or shame, then you're not connecting to your true source. And as Michael Rice would say, when you're in pain, your thoughts are in error. And in that moment, there's an opportunity. The discomfort, the frustration, the tension could be used by you as an alarm, as a wake-up call, letting you know something's in error, either in the logic of your thought process or if your logical thought process is intact. It's either based on a false premise or there's one or more false premises that have been woven into your thought process. And it's okay to just acknowledge that and step back and with childlike curiosity and playfulness say, okay, wow, I'm in pain. I must be in error. My thoughts must be off the mark. Let me just step back, figure out what I'm doing with my mind energy to create certain thoughts, and I'm pouring my mind energy into those thoughts and thereby creating these emotions that I say I don't want. And when that happens, then I'm awakened to the fact that I must be holding on to a goal. I must be holding a conclusion that says, in order for me to be safe or happy or at least content, someone or something outside of me or I need to change. And when I recognize that, now I will be aware of a goal that I'm pouring mind energy into that needs to be released in order for me to get clear vision, in order for me to have true perception, in order for me to get access to the hidden part of my mind that's actually there in the moment, creating the upset that I say I don't want. And that's the reality management worksheet process. And that's something that, as I said in the intro, has been improving the quality of my life and most of my relationships for almost 18 years now. And that's a process that is right in line with the Way of Mastery that we've been reading since January 10th. And I can, if I'm willing, I can choose again in each new moment. I can choose to pick up a worksheet. I can choose to understand that if I'm having upset in this moment, it's never about the situation in the moment. It's always about a falsehood or a false premise, and it's an old tape playing. It didn't start here and now. What I'm upset with in any moment is not what is happening in that moment. If I have upset, it's always because there's an old tape playing in my mind. There's an old trauma energy or belief system that's gotten activated. And if I want to restore myself to the awareness of my true nature and my perfect safety and my infinite power to choose again, I have to be willing to question the belief. Cancel the goal is another way to talk about it. And ask to be shown something that my conscious, logical mind simply cannot show me. So, reminding everyone who's listening that if you have a comment or question, even if I'm in the middle of reading, please feel free to call 563-999-3581 and press 1. And if no hands go up, I'll go back to the review we're doing of Lesson 10. And yesterday before I started reading, while I was waiting for somebody to put a hand up, I went back and hit some of the highlight points of this work about how we are creators and how our mind energy is completely under our control to choose in each new present moment. And near the end of the reading yesterday, it was telling us about how a creator, and you are a creator, who's in an enlightened space. We'll get back to that in a minute. We have somebody to put a hand up. Area code 956, you're in the air. Who do we have? Area code 956, did you intend to put a hand up? I have turned on your microphone. It says you have your microphone on. And if you're speaking, I can't hear you. So I'll turn the microphone back off and get back to what we were reading. If you did have a comment or a question, area code 956, please press 1 twice. It'll take the hand down and put it back up again, and I will turn on the microphone if that is what you desire. The reading says that a creator, and that means you and every human who has a mind that's functioning, is focusing their mind energy, which is a creative force. And a creator who is abiding in enlightenment, which is a moment-to-moment experience of actually being aware of their true nature, knows that all events are neutral. They're so neutral that they have no effect on anyone except for those who choose caught up in illusions. The creator, who's awakened, merely creates out of devotion to the mystery of that which has created him or her. The mind of an enlightened creator arises in the morning and says, "How this day might I extend my treasure, the treasure of the good, the holy, and the beautiful. How can I, right where I am, experience these treasures, even within the confines of this physical body?" How can I look lovingly upon what my physical eyes show me so that I see clearly, I discern or extract the good, the holy, and the beautiful, and therefore experience them for myself, give them to myself, have the ability to extend that to others. The mind of an enlightened creator knows that of themselves, they do nothing. They didn't create themselves. They don't even know when they were created. They don't know how they digest the food they eat. They don't even know how the body moves when they decide to get up and walk across the room. They don't know how their breath keeps moving when they're sleeping. And yet, in each moment of decision, they can allow a great power of mystery and love to direct their course. They can utilize time to refine their ability to hear only the voice for love, moment by moment, breath by breath, day by day, until time is translated into the eternal present moment. And the mind rests. It reclines in perfect union with its creator. Yes, events still occur. The world is still what the world will choose to be. The world will be unaware that there walks in its midst one who is awake. This person needs to make no show. They merely are the presence of wakefulness, knowing that in each moment they will now be informed by the guidance of the Comforter, the guidance of right-mindedness, the guidance of enlightenment. So they are no longer attracted to fearing. They don't think thoughts like, uh-oh, what should I say? What should I do? How will this person take it? How will that person take it? For the awakened creator, their mind understands that the world holds nothing of value for them. They experience their very life as an ongoing, flowing mystery, as though something else were living through them. And they're there to watch it. They're there to marvel at it. They're there to witness it and understand that of themselves, they do nothing. This happens, and you can cultivate having this energy flow through you under your awareness, but only if every fiber of your beingness is completely committed to holiness, to wholeness. The text says, you cannot leave a finger outside and yet get into heaven. All of your mind, all of your energy, all of your gifts, all of your very awareness must be committed to being the presence of peace. This is what no one can do for you. You have the infinite capacity to choose the focus of your conscious awareness in each new present moment. No one can make you choose for love. No one can make you choose to recognize and then extend the good, the holy, and the beautiful. No one can make you choose to focus on your true nature and your conscious awareness of that true nature moment to moment. This is what no one can do for you. You must choose to do it. Sitting at the feet of enlightened teachers will not do it for you. The wisest of students are those that hear the word and put it into practice diligently for themselves. You may remember earlier there was a statement in this work that said, you must choose to be very, very divinely selfish, and then you will not allow judgment to hold sway in your mind. You will not allow fear to be the director of your actions, thoughts, and words. Here we are on page 127 of the text, halfway through the page, and it says, "The wisest of students are those who hear the word and put it into practice diligently for themselves." Self-wisely, not for their mother, not for their father, not for their spouse, not for their brother, not for their sister, not for the sake of the planet, not for the sake of the universe, not for the sake of the new dawn that is coming, not for the sake of anything but themselves. For their self is what the Creator created. And that self calls out to you to honor it by separating yourself, capital S self, the truth of your being, from the illusions that you have allowed to make a home in your mind. That self, that higher S self, calls out to you to honor it by being clear about its true nature, by separating that true nature from any illusions about height and weight and demographic information and religious belief and location on the planet, and instead becoming wholly, totally committed to teaching only love. What does that mean, to teach only love? They've mentioned it several different ways in the book already. It means to choose to value only loving thoughts. It means to be vigilant for tension and contraction and resistance and catch it at its earliest sign and release your attachment to the thoughts that leave you judging and resisting and contracting. And as you release your attachment to those thoughts and beliefs that have you judging and resisting and contracting, you act in the moment, you move into a state of allowance. There is no other way, the book says. You can learn to sit in meditation and allow your body and the mind to float free and relax. You can learn rituals that help you focus your attention so that you remember what you're committed to. And you can learn to let go of the distractions of the world so they don't seem to quite catch you up and hook you as much as they used to. There are all kinds of strategies like that that you can enjoy and experience. And in the end, it's only this: a quiet choice within your inner sanctum, within your mind, within your willpower. It's a choice that's quietly made in the heart of your being that no one outside of you recognizes and no one sees and no one hears. The text reads, "This is why I once shouted at the Pharisees, 'Oh, yes, you indeed get your reward standing out here on the street corners, letting everybody know that you are fasting and praying,' when what you should be doing is going inside in your own private mind, in your own closet, to make this choice, to pray for the ability to stay consciously connected to your awareness of your true nature and your connection to your Creator. That is, to be in your own privacy, making no show, but simply using each moment to reaffirm your commitment to learning all that love is." How do you learn what love is? You ask to be taught by love in each moment. What's yours to do? What's yours to learn here? And as you ask to be taught, you will be shown. And as you are shown, then you express only love in the next moment. Ask, knock, and the door is opened. Again, it's a very private choice made in the quiet of the heart of your mind that rests right next to the heart of the Creator. Will you choose to teach only love by choosing to value only loving thoughts? moment to moment. Teaching only love means to value only the loving thoughts that move through your mind. The text says, forgiveness is an act through which you learn what love is, what truth is, what the actuality of life is. Forgiveness is this process of dismantling every false perception. How do you know if a perception is false? It results in a contraction, a constriction, a judgment, a tension, a negative emotional state. And when you use that process of dismantling false perceptions and you get to see and learn what the truth of life is, the truth of capital L love is, in that moment you are carried into a transcendence of the world. When you choose to share only loving thoughts, supportive thoughts, as you gently look upon the Christ mind in another person, this is what takes you into the transcendence of the world. You get to see the truth of the shimmering radiance of the creative energy that lies beneath or behind every perception you create. And you see every person's perfect harmlessness. You see the truth that they have no ability to constrain you or imprison you. And in that moment, you are taken beyond the world you see. You are taken into the world that's been created for you. The text goes on to say, and yet, all of these things rest on the practice of, quote, seeking first the kingdom, close quotes. What does this mean? This means you don't believe me. You don't believe some theological notion about what God or the Creator is. You don't adhere to a certain religion or a certain church doctrine. You turn within to the place in you that connects you to all living beings. And the flow of creation. The kingdom of heaven is within you. The kingdom of heaven is accessed through the power of choice. Which pebble will you drop into the pool of your consciousness? Imagine reaching a point where just prior to every action that you engage, without any ritual, without difficulty, without the grand shows and displays, without burning of incense and lighting of 40 million candles and all the Gregorian chants or the rock and roll music or whatever you choose, without any of that, in the silent temple of your heart, you make a simple choice. Quote, in this moment, I'm going to discover what it means to teach only love. Close quote. The text says, it might be a simple smile. It might be to let your eyes gaze at the beauty of a flower and say, ah, this is very good. It might be to eat your breakfast and actually be there while you're eating it instead of letting your mind run off to be at the office. Here, beloved friends, is the way to the truth that sets you free. You must absolutely become totally committed to being awake for no other reason than you've realized that you have no other choice. You've already made all of the other choices, and they have all led only to pain. Now, that's a message that keeps coming up in this work. You're free to make whatever choice you want. You're free to value your anger. You're free to value your judgment. And a work like this simply asks, how can you choose differently when you don't like the consequences or the effects of the choices you've made? Will you choose differently, or will you keep choosing the same way, producing the same unpleasant results, and blaming the world around you? You can. you have the infinite capacity to choose the focus of your conscious awareness in each moment. That is something that can never be taken to you. That is part of how you are an infinite creator. So, this work is calling us over and over again to slow down, take a breath, and notice what is the effect of the choices we're making. This work is asking us to wake up and realize that however we are experiencing our life in this moment is the effect of two things meeting in this moment. One is the choices we've made in the past and the energies that have rippled out from us, that have bounced off of manifested reality and coming back to us, and how do we experience them as we are conscious in this moment. That's one factor. And the other factor is, how will we choose to interpret and respond to those energies as they come back in this moment? Will I see myself as a victim, or will I see myself as a constant creator? The next section is titled, Recognizing the Presence of Christ Within. Yourself is calling out to be recognized for what it is. Your true self, your higher self, is an awakened master, the presence of Christ in you that would inform every step, that would, if you let it, inform every decision, that will, if you let it, inform the quality of your perception, that will, if you allow it, inform the very nature of your forever expanding, transparent consciousness. If you allow it, if you ask it, it will do these things for you. For it is your consciousness alone that can reach out and embrace all created things. Until you literally realize that all things have arisen from within you. That is the truth of how big your true self, your capital S self, actually is. That is how grand you are. Why? Because that is all that you truly are. You are the ocean from which waves and waves of dimensions and worlds have arisen. That mind, capital M mind, that is what you are required to let be in you, to be consciously aware of as your true essence, even as it was once in me, Yeshua, as I walked upon your earth. On your earth. The text says, please do not make it difficult. Just breathe into that. Please choose again if it seems difficult, if you have a negative emotion, if you're in contraction or fear, if you say, the way is not easy and without effort. The way is hard. It's arduous. It's traumatic. It's a burden to carry. If you're saying that, please choose again. This lesson, particularly this lesson, says if you're experiencing your life as a burden, if you're experiencing trying to be loving as a problem and a process and a difficulty, please do not make it difficult. The next paragraph says, whenever you hear of a teacher that's teaching this or a teacher teaching that, ask yourself this. When you hear their teaching, do they offer you simplicity or complexity? Do they offer you ordinary peace? Or must you have several trappings around you in order to achieve peace? Do they give you complex meditations and prayers and things to do? Or do they simply remind you of the truth and ask you to rest in it? Will they tell you that you need to go on 1,000 pilgrimages? Or do they remind you that when you drink your cup of tea in the morning, heaven is present? And if you remember who is making the tea, you realize The Christ mind is making this tea. The Christ mind is drinking this tea. The Christ mind is in me. Be therefore not distracted, for in the end of this age, there is coming forth a whole smorgasbord of those who profess to be teachers of enlightenment, who will guide you into all knowledge. Please, look carefully. Do they demand of you that you follow them? Do they demand of you that you give up your own discernment? Or do they ask you to look deeper within yourself? Do they ask you to really understand, what are you feeling? What do you think about this? What do you want to do? What wants to express uniquely through you in this moment? Are you willing to accept responsibility for the effect of what you choose? What do you believe? What do you want? Do they tell you that you are free? You are free. You are equal to everyone as I am equal to you. I'm just in this temporary role of guide for you. And someday, you'll be far beyond where I am. How do these teachers speak? What do they teach? Is there fear filtering into their words? Do they believe that they must teach you to control the forces of nature, the forces of your mind? Do they teach you to protect yourself against evil? There are many who profess to be teachers of enlightenment, and there will be many more. But when you hear them talk about fear and complexity and evil that you must protect yourself from, when you hear these things coming out of them, turn and flee from their presence, for you do not need them. You are already beyond them. Ask just this, quote, how can I extend my treasure this day, close quotes. How can I extend the good, the holy, and the beautiful? Well, in order to extend it, I've got to be aware that I'm in possession of it. I have to be consciously aware that I'm part of that flow of the creative energy, which creates and extends the good, the holy, and the beautiful. The text goes on and says, and lay up treasures where moth and dust cannot corrupt. That is, put a value of your mind energy on things where time, materiality, the body, and the world cannot hook you. Rather, learn to value, it says, rather lay up treasures that are in heaven. So learn to value the process of dismantling false perceptions that they call forgiveness. Learn to value personal peace. Learn to value the awareness of your limitlessness, of your unlimitedness, of your infinite expansive creation and consciousness. Learn to recognize and value your power, which is the power of creation, that is expressed by where you choose to focus your mind energy. Learn to value anything which brings you joy and puts a smile upon your face. Lay up for yourself these treasures, and all things shall be added unto you. Again, we've talked about this before. Guy Finley's looked at that quote from the Matthew Gospels, the Western Gospels, and said, here's a quote that says, seek ye first the kingdom of heaven, and all these things shall be added unto you. And Guy Finley went back to the ancient Aramaic, did some study, did some research of other scholars, people like Neil Douglas Klotz. And he says, that quote is not about gaining stuff. That quote's not about amassing material goods and accoutrements in life. That quote is more like learn to value above all things, love above all things, the rule of the divine mind and life. And it's completely equitable or balanced nature. And when you value that above all things, all of these other cravings and passions and obsessions and desires you have will be placed in a passive position within you. And your instant, constant awareness of your connection to your source will be the driving force that you use to create your experience of life in each moment. And that's when you'll have the heaven, the bliss, the contentment, the joy as your present moment experience. Book says, lay up treasures for yourself, such as value, dismantling false perceptions. They call that forgiveness. Value peace. Value your unlimitedness. Value the recognition of your unlimited power and the power of creative thought flowing through you. Value everything that brings you joy and puts a smile on your face, and then you will be laying up for yourself these treasures in the kingdom. For there is a way of being in this world that requires no planning or striving, though to enter it does require the relinquishing of fear. Earlier in one lesson they said, we're going to be asking you to explore what the difference is between the striving that your family and your culture and your language has taught you and what allowing feels like. We're going to be asking you to substitute the striving that you've been practicing for decades with allowing. That is what they're talking about, as there is a way of being in the world that's not here at all. Being in the world but not of the world. You're not striving and valuing the acquisition of physical, material goods and wealth and power within this illusory world. But the way requires a commitment to teaching only love until your mind is once again whole and complete. The divisions have been seen as false and released. There's a way of being in the world that is not here at all. Your body still abides. Yes, you still look and act just like everybody thinks and acts. That is, other people know your name. They know where you live. You know your name and where you live, and you know which car you're supposed to be driving, and you know whom you go home to at night. But through all of it, there pervades in your consciousness a transparency as you look upon all things. You see the false as the false. You see that the only thing that truly holds value for you is your awareness of your connection to your source. And whatever feelings arise, they come and go. But somehow you begin to recognize that you are much larger than the things that come and go, that you are watching a dance of shadows. You're watching a dream. You're watching it gently passing by. And it goes in a split cosmic second. This does not become a way in which you deny your experience. Rather, it gives you the freedom to embrace your experience and live it totally with passion, purpose, power, and in perfect freedom. You release the mechanisms within you that have created and become attached to anxiety and pressure. And all that's left is the willingness to dance in the world of dreams while remaining awake. If indeed you are putting into practice your 5 minutes of sitting, being more and more consciously aware of your role as a constant creator, you're already carrying yourself closer and closer, perhaps more and more deeply, into the transparency that we're describing here. And that transparency grows to a point, you might think of it as a critical mass, when suddenly you as a beingness can no longer even hold the thought of yourself as a body in space and time. Then the body simply dissolves away and your consciousness will never experience the limitations of the body again. But you will bring with it the joys the bodily experience taught you. You'll bring it with you, for they are imprinted on your consciousness forever. This earth is a beautiful place, but it is only a pale reflection of the radiant, transcendent beauty of the good, the holy, and the beautiful that pervades the Creator's creation. Love this world, embrace this world, thank this world, and do not cling to it. Learn then to teach only love. Teach only love. What does that mean? That means choosing to value only loving thoughts. You might have heard us talk in this work several times already before we got here to lesson 10. It says, all minds are joined. If all minds are joined, that means I might have thoughts flowing through my mind that didn't originate with me. Thoughts of violence, thoughts of pettiness, thoughts of bitterness and anger and hurt. If when they come into my awareness, I revolt against them, I contract and I shudder and I get defensive and tight and I say, oh, that's a horrible thing and why am I having that thought? I'm adding energy to that thought. If, on the other hand, I just notice it with childlike curiosity, wow, where'd that come from? Wow, that's not loving. I'm going to choose to release that. I'm going to choose to value only the loving thoughts that come across my awareness. I'm going to pour my mind energy into powerful, positive, useful, creative thoughts. I had somebody, I had this come across my, my consciousness, my awareness. There's a major league, an NBA player, basketball player, Giannis, I can't even pronounce his last name. It's a Greek name. And this article is written by somebody who's clearly either in psychology or in sociology and is talking about the Blue Dolphin Rule. And the Blue Dolphin Rule is based in this awareness of emotional intelligence. And the Blue Dolphin Rule is a way to counteract the White Bear Rule. Dostoevsky, in an essay over a century ago, said, if you try not to think of a polar bear, you only invite that thought to come back with even greater force. And so how do you stop the white bears of self-criticism and overwhelming failure if these thoughts come to your mind? And, of course, you've been conditioned in a culture that says you either value these thoughts or you fight against them and then you add energy to them. Well, here we enter the blue dolphin. The blue dolphin is replacement thought. It's a different point of concentration. It's a go-to something from your experience that you can immediately switch your focus to if a white bear comes to mind, if a negative thought comes to mind, if a thought of failure or lack of value comes to mind. And here is this basketball player who's using this process. They just lost the seventh game in a best-of-seven series, and now they're out of the playoffs. And the reporter says, what stands out about what's coming up short in this, about you coming up short in this series? Is it that you didn't shoot enough three-point shots? And the basketball player Giannis says, well, obviously we didn't make enough threes. On the other hand, I couldn't be more proud of the guys and the effort they gave. The next reporter says, okay, so you started good and you missed more shots as the game went on. Did your legs feel heavy at all? And Giannis says, legs heavy, body heavy, mind heavy, everything was heavy. No, I was just trying to be aggressive. And at the end of the day, it's a game seven, and I'd rather keep playing and coming and keep being aggressive than to go into passive mode. And I can live with that. And then the reporter says, hey, Giannis, how do you digest the finality of the season? Do you watch the film and let that sink in? And Giannis says, nope, it's over with. Over with. There aren't any films that I'm going to watch. I just got to go and get some rest and get on the court later and start getting better and try and improve my parts of the game. Hopefully I can come back in healthy and good shape at a good place and keep enjoying basketball and get ready for my 10th season. So every time they throw a negative thought at him, he comes back with a positive thought. He's chosen the blue dolphin thoughts to combat the white bear. Here's an example. A white bear thought, a negative thought. You lost your job. This stuff always happens to you. You have the worst luck in the world. A positive thought, a blue dolphin thought is, that job was never going to take me anywhere anyway. Now's my chance to try and make money on my own terms and do something I actually enjoy. Negative thought, the white bear thought. You're so behind. You should be months ahead of where you are right now. You're never going to make it. The positive thought, the blue dolphin thought. Look back at what you've accomplished over the past 6 months. You're so much further ahead of where you were. Keep up the good work. Good things will happen. I literally had somebody in my office earlier today just finished talking about how he's got 32 years at his current job. And a week or two ago when we were talking about it, people had visited another branch of his company in another state and then come back to his branch and said, oh, my God, everybody there knows you. Your reputation is golden in this company. Everybody thinks you're the cat's meow. He sat in my office today and talked about how a couple of weeks ago he got written up for a minor infraction. And now he's thinking, oh, my God, if I lose this job, I won't be able to stay alive. I'll feel suicidal. What do you think I did? I went for the blue dolphin thought. I tried to help him formulate some of the things that had been coming out of his mouth about his job, his career, his reputation there, about how when he has a thought like, I couldn't take it if I lost my job. It's exactly what we've been reading about in The Way of Mastery. Be careful what you pour your mind energy into in those negative thoughts. And if you want better results in your life, recognize those negative thoughts and choose to value the positive ones. Shift to a positive thought. Hey, I told them, hey, if you got a negative thought about yourself or somebody else or a negative emotion active in your mind, the bottom line observations say you can instantly know three things. It's a lie or based in a falsehood. This is an old tape playing from a different time in your life when you didn't have anywhere near as many resources. And if you act from it, it's probably going to make your life worse. So you have these thoughts, I won't be able to make it if I lose this job. That's probably coming from a teenager version of you who struggled in school. That may be coming from a version of you if you are one who had struggled with alcohol or drugs or one who's been through a series of abusive relationships. Those younger versions of yourself, when they get activated, they create your perception, and they will lead to the thoughts that you can't make it and you can't survive, and you can instantly know they're false. Take a breath. Shift over to the blue dolphin thoughts or the positive thoughts. That's our show for the day. I've realized that we've gone all the way through the end of our time. I just turned on the microphone for Jeannie Rice. I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate you.
Same here. Have a wonderful show.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Tuesday, May the 17th, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And we'll give Michael just a moment to get dialed in, and I'll invite you to go to our website, which is whyagain.org, and just look around and see what all's out there. There's some new stuff, and let me know if you can't find something. Drop me a line at Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org, and let me know what you're looking for, and I'll see if I can get it put in a position where you can find it more easily. Hold the space for us as soon as they pick Aria up this afternoon or this evening around 5 o'clock. Michael and I are going to hit the road, and we will be traveling. Hopefully we'll get 4 hours under our belt tonight, stop, and get some rest, and then go on into St. Louis in the morning, get there and meet Krista and the kids, and then after we spend some time with them, we'll drive on over to Kansas City. And so we've got about 13 hours of driving ahead of us, and Michael J. will be getting married on Saturday. So the remainder of this week and on Monday and possibly even on Tuesday, we'll be doing pre-recorded shows because we're going to be in the midst of all kinds of activity. So, all right, I'll turn it over to you, Michael.
And we've got some special stuff for you for those pre-recorded shows, stuff we wouldn't normally play. So I think you're going to enjoy them. And if you do listen and, you know, take some notes and perhaps we can do some conversation and questions and thoughts about it as we get back online again. So welcome, everybody. Delighted that you're here once again. And one of the things that happens with the way our mouths run, the way our minds run, and unfortunately, in a lot of cases, the way our bodies run, is it's all on autopilot. A lot of it just takes no effort, no interruption, no interference whatsoever. It will just run its mouth. It'll just run whatever's in there. And if we allow that to happen, that's when, unless we've got a perfect history, you know, if our parents, our grandparents, their parents, their parents, their parents, and their parents are all still alive, then there are energetic patterns, frequencies of death, that are structured within our cellular structure. And whatever's going on in the environment will tend to resonate or activate those energetic patterns and put an end to our physical expression. And the objective of this work is to wake up beyond that and to recognize that there are qualities of energy. It's kind of like back to basics. There are qualities of energy that belong in a human system, and there are qualities of energy that just do not belong in this system. It's become the norm for hostility, fear, rage, guilt, grief, drama, and trauma to run in our business lives, in our relationships, sometimes in the relationship with the person we look at in the mirror. But while that has become the norm in our culture, none of that is natural, which means that it's going to take change the direction of what's on automatic pilot. You know, we have this just amazing physiological device called the body-mind unit, which right from its design get-go is designed to be self-repairing, self-restoring, and it takes a lot of assault in order to destroy it. And unfortunately, most of us, if we look back at our history, you know, anybody in our bloodline that's over 120 is gone already. So it's gotten the better of how many generations, to the point where we just say, well, that's natural. That's just the human lifespan. I'd offer that's not true. My offering is that's a fraud. We bought that lie, like we bought a lot of other lies, like somebody else makes me mad, somebody else makes me sad, somebody else hurts me. We bought all kinds of lies. And oftentimes, because it takes effort to to do something about it. People call that hard, like putting the pen to a piece of paper to do some forgiveness work is hard, and people avoid it like the plague. Well, you know, we've even made that one easier. I shouldn't say we, because Jeannie did the design work on it. But if you go to your app store and type in the words Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness, you'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app. And we made it easier. You don't have to have pen and paper. You can just put a few digits in your phone and engage in the forgiveness process. So it makes for much less effort than it otherwise takes. And many people, because everything else will just run on autopilot, they don't have to do anything, they don't have to think about it, they don't have to be responsible. So many people just sort of let it happen because it seems like it's hard to do anything about it. The truth is, it's really hard to live without conscious interaction in your life. It's really hard to live with autopilot, hostility, fear, sadness, self-deprecation, guilt, fear, etc. And so our thesis here is that we can face each and every one of those things, and over time, with effort, no effort required to just let those things run on automatic pilot, but with effort, over time, we can remove those things. And it just makes for such a different process when we allow ourselves to do that. So that's where we're heading with this work, is the invitation to engage in really truly functioning out of the truth of who we are as human beings. And if you hold a newborn and tap into the essence of that newborn, you will notice a very powerful characteristic of this being that you're holding, and that is that its essence is love. And in this case, love is not a verb, but it is a noun. It describes a state of human life. And having, you know, come through generations and generations and generations of what we call civilization. It's interesting, back several decades ago, they asked Mahatma Gandhi what he thought of Western civilization. And he said he thought it would be a good idea. And he was referring to the fact that there is so much just blatant insanity that runs behind the scenes. And if we don't know any better, then we'll do behaviors that add to that and simply go along with the inertia of the program, so to speak. And if you remember from high school, the definition of inertia is that a body moving in a particular direction at a particular rate of speed will tend to continue to move in that direction at that rate of speed until it's acted upon by an outside force. So we come into a mind that is programmed prior to birth and a genetic structure that's already a fait accompli. And the culture would teach us, well, there's nothing we can do about that. Our offering is there's plenty you can do about that. You know, they're shown in the laboratory that, you know, as little as 8 hours, you can change your genes. And you change your genes by engaging in different behaviors than what comes with this autopilot system. The main tool is the tool of forgiveness. We suggest that hand in hand with forgiveness, which means removal, not letting others off the hook, that you take time to cultivate your relationship with yourself as love. Take time to spend in that state, connected to that state, and functioning out of that state. Find environments where you perhaps are challenged to do that, but choose to do it because you recognize that's who you are. a perfect laboratory for that one is to have a child of three around, two, one, which we've had the last 3.5 years. We've had the opportunity, usually 2 to 3 days a week to be with that presence of love, to reinforce that presence of love, and to assist her. Something other than love is coming online in her mind to recognize that that's not who she is, and to continue a conversation with her about we're here to designed for something other than unbridled hostility and fear, which so much of our culture is engaged in. These days when I ask the question of Jeannie or ask Aria Rain, why are we here? She'll say, to be love. She knows exactly why we're here. And so it's an ongoing daily practice to function as love in her presence and to support her recognizing herself as that. So it all becomes a practice. And the work of forgiveness and each of the tools that follows. When you look at, there's some 35 or so different tools that we've developed. The communication tool, the commitment, the codependence tool. Each one of them is a different worksheet, purpose, personal power, and commitment. You look at empowered to heal. You look at the Beatitudes. Jeannie's going to play the conversation that took place. There's a gentleman who studied with us at Heartland and became involved in a deeper level, with the work, and in particular, working with the Beatitudes. And so Mark Hattis and I had a conversation over 3 or 4 days where we really ferreted down, drilled down into the Aramaic Beatitudes, which are just profoundly powerful in application for taking us out of autopilot and putting us on a conscious plane where we truly function as we're designed to function, as the active presence of love. So in essence, that's the purpose for our radio show. That's why we do what we do. And we're delighted that you're here to be part of it. And would love to open a conversation with anyone who's got any thoughts to share, anything going on in your world, anything that you'd like support and assistance with the tools. Ms. Jeannie, we have anything happening in the chat room? I know I talked to somebody yesterday who had said that they were sending a question in the app from their iPhone. Have you gotten anything in the way of questions from somebody on an iPhone, sweetie?
I got more of a statement. They were, and I wrote to back to them. One, they asked, what were the two dots behind the B? And I've looked on the iPhone, and there's several things that have a B in it. And so I wrote him back and said, what B are you talking about? Because I'm not seeing what you're talking about. And then he's in both apps, the iPhone and the Android, like in the written worksheet, down at the bottom are the definitions. So in
right.
the app, the words that have a definition have an asterisk beside of it. And if you click on an asterisk, it pops up the whole list. And you may have to scroll down to find that particular definition, but all of the definitions will pop up. And so they
right.
were saying that one of the definitions didn't pop up. So I was waiting to hear back from them to see what the other was. I'm not sure what dots he's talking about. And
okay.
then I'll get the instead of contacting India twice, I thought I'd do it all at one time. So if anybody would look at both the iPhone and the Android and go through and just do some, worksheets and the game and look at the commitments and send a question and whatever and make sure everything works. And if you run into something that doesn't, please drop me a line at jeannie@whyagain.org and let me know what's not working so that I can get India to take care of all of it all at one time.
Yeah, that would be awesome if you would support us by, tracking any kind of challenges that you have. On each page, there's a button to click, and you can just send us feedback right then and there. So anywhere you're on it, and if you mark, identify what page you're on, where you're at, in which app, whether it's an iPhone or the Android that will help us to clarify and tweaking all the details.
And I
huge
know
number
that,
of details,
you know,
in there, sweetie.
Several people say, there's not enough room, you know, when I write out everything and then I go to print it, it runs over top of itself. Well, the app is not made for you to do an epistle.
You can't write a book in
you
it?
You say, no. So it's like, you know, what's your thoughts? Well, I think that they did, and then they went, and then I said, and then they, it won't take all of that. I mean, it will, but it's going to print it out as Globble. So, anyway.
Is that the official app word, Globble?
Yeah, that's my word. So, anyway, I can't take care of that one for you. It would be like, you know, if I made the app to have enough space that you could write a 200-word story, then it would take you 5 pages to print it out at the end of it.
So. Right. So the answer is meant to be concise. And you know, if you do have something, that's a good point. If you do have something that's a real major issue and you really need to get in deeper, that can be the place where, you know, you keep a notebook, you keep a worksheet notebook that goes hand in hand with the app. And, you know, if there's an issue that spills over that, you know, this one's obviously more intense than there's room to handle in the app, then, you know, keep a notebook that goes hand in hand with it and write your longhand, you know, your epistles. And that can kind of, you know, be used somewhat as a mind shifter if you get something that's that detailed. And the way that we suggest that people use a mind shifter is once you finish writing it, and you may have 2, 4, 10 pages of written notes from the mind shifter, is that then you go back and read each of the steps in the mind shifter and you really look at, okay, so this is this another worksheet? Is this a Hydra that I've gotten in touch with that I need to go back and do? So make notes on what that might be, or maybe this is a place where you need to sit down and write a responsibility communication to someone, or this is someone that you need to pull the commitment out and start to work with, or, you know, really utilize the additional tools that are available in the on the website. And of course, on our website, I don't know, the website's over 20,000 pages, and there's just all kinds of material that you can work with and put into action in your world. And so, and if there's something missing somewhere along the way from any of the tools that you see, if you drop us a note, we will take that input and see what we can do to enhance our ability to support you. The objective of our website, the objective of this show, of everything that we do, is to assist in making the tools available. So, and you know, we do that in two different formats, just absolutely as much as we can make available, we make available freely. Yes, there are some paid ways to participate in this work. You know, while we do everything we have the ability to do without a requirement for money, we haven't figured out yet how to do it all for nothing. You know, working with the technicians and the, I don't even want to start to think about how many thousands of dollars are in the app to get it to the point where it is and it's available freely. But that, of course, has to come from somewhere. And we haven't got a printing press for money yet. So we're waiting for that to deliver, actually, from the government. That would be nice. But we don't have one. So if you're using the tools and it's supporting you, then we invite you to have some input and create some support. You know, you can go to our website and there's a PayPal link and just do a donation. And when you do a donation, if you make it to friends and family, you know, if you just put it straight through, it's like you're making a purchase. And that way they take a percentage of it. If you put it in as friends and family, then they don't take a percentage and we have a little more to work with. So, and you know, beyond the most basic lifestyle you can have, everything that comes in from this work goes right back into developing the tools and creating broader and broader support for making the tools available. So, And we appreciate everybody who steps up to the plate and pushes that donate button and assists us.
And I had a thought on the, you know, yes, when you're doing a worksheet, a lot of times they turn into hydras. And, you know, what, that's like Michael said, you know, have a notebook and write those down because they're additional worksheets. But I have worked with a couple of people that it takes them 1, 2, 3 hours to do a worksheet. And I think that in their cases anyway, and I've told them this, that kind of a self-sabotage. It's like I'll get so busy doing this worksheet and going so deep that I avoid the one issue that's in it. What do you say to that?
Well, busyness is the drug of the culture. I mean, you know, go back to when we did the work in prison up in Ionia, Michigan, and Rex followed through and did an ongoing support group. And there was a requirement, you know, they taught laws of living in the prison there. And this is a super high security prison, literally it's an old Civil War fort, actually. And the prisoners there are the most prolific offenders in the whole state of Michigan, and they're all housed in that facility, and they're there from a minimum of 25 years to life. And these people, it's a men's prison, so these guys are in their cells unless they happen to have a job in the commissary, or maybe they get out for an hour or two to go and work in the commissary or the laundry or what have you, or one of the slave jobs that they have, because, you know, in prisons, it's under the Constitution, slavery is still allowed in the prison system. But there was a requirement of doing 5 worksheets a day through the prelude to laws of living. And literally, the group of men that were setting up to do laws of living, every one of them had one reason why they couldn't turn in the 5 worksheets a day over that period. And these are men who are locked in their cells by themselves 23 out of 24 hours a day. And they all said to a man that they were too busy to do the worksheets. And, you know, in a sense, I understand. Because going in, uncovering, looking at the raw energetic patterns that are beneath our hostility and fear responses can be quite a challenging thing to do. But if you really, truly put the pen to the paper and do that work, everything that you're able to face and hold a space of active, connected love for begins to dissolve, begins literally, you know, energetically. The energetic interaction between active present love and trauma is to dissolve, literally to, you know, I'm thinking in terms now of physics and atomic energy, is to literally remove the energetic infrastructure, the literal genetic and traumatic patterns by exposure to love literally begin to change their nature and their structure. And ultimately, that's the way that we can open and undo genetic patterns as well. And so it's a skill set. It's something that develops over time. And sadly, it's not something our culture has given much emphasis to. In fact, in most cases where a culture discovered tools for doing that, it kind of moved out of the realm, in too many cases, of here's how you heal yourself and function as a human being function as active love, and it's been turned into a religion. You know, if you go back to this man Yeshua 2,000 years ago, upon which this work is founded, his Aramaic teachings, his Aramaic words, you find him saying, not, I come to bring you dogma and doctrine, I come to bring you my religious beliefs or beliefs you need to believe, but he says, I come to bring you life. It's about living as a human being. And each of those tools are techniques and methods by which you can literally uncover the energetic patterns right down to and including in your genes, and through exposure to love, dissolve them and move forward, living life more abundantly, living as love and letting go of the need to interpret everything through generational patterns of hostility or fear, and particularly to interpret through the power person patterns of the past. And you remember the power person we've spoken about many times is the person in your life who had more power for your life than you did at some point, was not functioning as love. And if you perceived those situations as survival situations, then the tendency is to allow the behaviors that were done by the power person to control your thoughts, your feelings, your behavior prompts, so that you will tend to function out of the dynamics of the power person. That's our codependence to interdependence work. And if you're ready to do a whole new level of work in that regard, we do have a self-study 90-hour video series called Codependence to Interdependence Communication Practicum. And that's available as a self-study program that you can take and put to work in your life and go through at your own pace. Literally, the teaching, the questions and the answers, the process work of two full codependence to interdependence intensives. We did them back to back. So the second one was kind of like a refinement. You know, it came right on top of the first, and it was a refinement of the first. And we captured all of that on video. And so that whole package is available as a self-study. We do not have an intensive, you know, happening at this particular moment. And so that is a self-study that you can pick up. And, of course, the idea of the radio show here, one of the objectives is to create support for everyone, and in particular for people who are doing the intensive work. So come and join us for that. You can actually buy the whole package, including two personal code evaluations. And the personal code evaluations are an evaluation that touches into 10 different areas of how the mind works, how your life works. And it shows, it's actually based on what's called the MMPI, which is kind of the gold standard of psychological testing. And it looks at 10 different areas of your life and shows you where your weaknesses are. So it looks at stress management. It looks at how you honor yourself. It looks at how you honor others. It looks at how you honor the truth. It looks at the level of fear in your mind. It looks at the level of hostility. It looks at how you honor laws of living, understand and honor laws of living. It looks at nutrition, digestion, toxicity, and the way that your mind is consistent in producing perceptions about what's going on in your life. And it looks at the 10th area is use of will. That is, have you awakened the spiritual faculty of will, and does that function in you, or are you run by your mind? And so what happens is when you do that evaluation, you get two of them with the intensive. The first one you do, and it where there are actually two videos that we'll send you that you watch to understand what those evaluation scores mean. And then you're given specific assignments to do in your three weakest areas. When you finish the intensive out, you've got another evaluation coming. And that has a purpose, two purposes. One is it will tell you how effective your work has been. It'll show you exactly where your improvements are, where your weaknesses are once again. So that's purpose one. You can say, well, gee, you know, my lowest score was how I honor self. And yeah, I used to stand in front of the mirror and go, man, ugly, man, I never do anything right, man, it's stupid. Oh, boy, they knew me, they had me. And now you stand there and you look at yourself and go, oh, a human being, look at this sweetness, look at this. So if you move from, let's say, where that's a number one challenge to where it becomes a number eight challenge, and then we'll give you a percentage change. So maybe, I mean, we'll see people as the scales are 100 points, and we'll see people who say, let's say on that particular challenge, we'll move over a period of intensive by 90 points. That's like monumental. And so you'll know when you finish the intensive out exactly how effective the work you have done has been. And the second purpose of the second evaluation is it then gives you a new set of challenges. It looks at where your three weakest areas are out of the 10. It says, okay, here's your next level of work. And so if you choose to participate in that, it's a powerful process to enter, and you can do it at your own pace. And then the radio show is here to answer questions and support you in it. So if you want to do that, drop Janie a note, Janie at whyagain.org. And make sure to put your name and your phone number in it, and we will get you set up if you want to do that. The cost of that 90-hour video package is $600, including the two evaluations. So it's pretty pretty inexpensive. The live intensive was $1,800 that we did. It's, you know, the basic video work for that package. The people who participate in that, it was an online. It also includes a set of 14 weeks, 3 days, pardon me, three recipes a day for 14 weeks of fresh and raw recipes. So one of the things that we suggest people do, like for instance, if you came to Heartland and were participating in intensive, you would not see anything cooked for that time period that you were at that intensive. We do all fresh and raw food. And so there's a private Facebook page that you get a link to if you participate in the intensive. And that gives you the whole process for prepping food. Thank you to Yurate for the awesome job that she did in setting that Facebook page up. And she's got videos, and you know, she covers what equipment's needed in the kitchen and the food prep. And she's just done a really awesome job. That comes as part of the package, and you have permanent access to the 90 hours of video plus the Facebook page. And then there's an app called Trello, where we have a private section with all of those recipes, color pictures and all that. So that also is part of that package. So it's a pretty complete package to support people entering into transformation. And of course, with the food part, it's up to each person how far they choose to go. I know there's one gentleman who, let's see, he did his first intensive probably 15 years ago. He's done two intensives since, and the last one he did was about 2 years ago. And when he came to the intensives, you know, he was at Heartland, and when he came to the intensives, he said he enjoyed the food, but it wasn't, you know, his interest to do that, to do anything with it. So kind of went back to his old way of eating, but actually it's maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, he contacted us and said, hey, I need to get a copy of that recipes book you've got. How do I get that? So, okay, it's in our catalog. You can go order it there. He said, yeah, I've decided it's time for me to start to make some changes in the way I eat. And so he's been picking up on that and really, you know, moving into the next level of nurturing himself through, you know, eating food other than the SAD diet, the standard American diet. And so something that I've been really working on understanding and, you know, moving in the direction of on another level, you know, for years we have been vegetarian, and we've invited people to look at that as a lifestyle. There's several really good reasons for doing that. One, eating animals is one of the most destructive things there is to the environment. You know, the acres and acres and acres that it grows to produce 1 pound of beef. Let's see if I remember the numbers correctly. It takes about 100 gallons of water to put 4 quarter pounders in a bun at one of these fast food restaurants. It takes 100 gallons of water to produce that little bit of beef, fresh water. And then the waste, the methane, cows, it's been scientifically shown cows fart a lot of methane, greenhouse gas into the atmosphere. And the chemicals used to raise the grains, you know, it's not as if there's organic production going on. So the chemicals, the runoff in the water, it's just monumental, the impact of eating animals. And it is, you know, a really major thing. Just even if you start cutting back 1-2 meals a week or 1 meal a day, the amount of greenhouse gas, the amount of toxic pollution, and the waste of arid land. You know, sadly, most commercial food production uses commercial food production methods, which means it absolutely destroys the soil. And, you know, if you chemically destroy the organisms in the soil, if you pour on, you know, 10 gallons of glyphosate, which is what they do in order to produce, let's say, a field of GMO corn, we start out and they literally use 10 gallons of this toxic. I'm amazed. I mean, we just, at Dad's, we watch, you know, he's got television on pretty much continuously. And, you know, I'm amazed they're still advertising Roundup, and they've got cancer, you know, convictions. They've got cancer payouts by the tens of millions of dollars, but they're still selling it. It just amazes me. But basically, to start a field of corn, 10 gallons per acre is poured on that corn. So everything in the soil is absolutely, completely dead, which means it's not soil anymore. It's dirt. Commercially produced food is grown in dirt. It is not produced in soil. The experts who study soil and soil erosion, desertification, and those sorts of things tell us that at the rate we're going, we've probably got 60 years of soil left on planet Earth. You know, we've talked about how we're doing gardens. Well, calculating out, we've probably in the last 3 years that we've been producing gardens here, we've created about probably almost 4 tons of soil. We're not growing our food in dirt, we're growing it in soil. And, you know, a lot of those things, once they've, you know, the 10 gallons of glyphosate has soaked into the soil and made it into dirt, then they plant a seed, then they come along and put chemicals on it to force the seed to grow. And then they pour more glyphosate on it when the crop is mature to kind of freeze frame it. It dries the product out, and then it becomes harvestable and storable without deterioration, because things that are alive, things that are vital, actual food deteriorates. And that's not good for profit. So, you know, all of these things come into it as a factor. And so we don't say, oh, you have to go, you know, live food, or you have to go vegan or anything else. We're just saying, you know, become conscious of what you're doing with food. And the whole food program on Facebook and the Trello app are designed to assist people in doing that. There are instructions for what kind of equipment you need for your kitchen, where to get it, you know, and if you're going to do, let's say, a fresh and raw regimen, when to order the food, what to order to do next week's meals. I mean, it's all been laid out for you, so it's an easier transition. So that's all part of the process there, and, you know, that's just two of the things that we've invested in the last year and a half to make the support for transitioning into a true there's so many descriptors that come to mind. You know, live food, live life, lifestyle, and living as a human being. And so there are just a couple of things that we've invested in over the last couple of years to bring that forward on a global scale and make it available. So come and play. And beyond that, Miss Jeannie,
Okay. We've
got about 20 minutes left. We got anybody out there?
We do have a hand up. And I just wanted to say, because three out of the people that are doing the Mind Shifters and Steel Point, we are doing the support group tonight. Michael will be doing it via Zoom.
Yes.
By his phone while I'm driving. So when you heard me announce earlier that we're going to get on the road when they pick up Aria, we are still doing the support meeting tonight.
Oh, yes.
But I'll be driving and Michael will be doing it on his phone. So we will still be
Absolutely.
There at 7 o'clock tonight. And
For sure.
our
For
caller
sure.
is 610, I believe it's Susan. Welcome.
It is. Thank you for that tirade, Michael.
Was that a tirade? Oops.
Well, it was the thing I wanted to ask you. I mean, I'm so glad you're talking about that. That is one of my things, as you know. But you put it out there without one of my – I mean, those issues are triggers for me, and I'm constantly doing my worksheets on reacting because I react to things that are hurting the planet or that I perceive are hurting the planet and hurting animals. And so you're talking about things that are very important, and I love it.
Right.
And you sound out of breath. Are you okay?
Oh, yeah, I'm fine. No out of breath here.
Okay. Oh, okay.
You're kind of breathing.
But let
heavy,
me add. Okay, well, you know, you got to breathe. It's definitely all day, every day, breathe. But
yes,
let me add, before we go on to your next thought, and thanks for acknowledging that, because I think it's really important, too. There's, if you want a really good look at the whole food issue, go to YouTube and type in the name Satguru. S-A-T-G-U-R-U, Satguru, and Soil.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an excellent presentation. This is actually done in the country of Jordan. And they've got literally, they're lining the whole country up to get behind this Indian guru's. And he's a different kind of guru in that it's not, just follow me. This man is active and on it. Like, I forget what I think he got on a motorcycle. This guy's in his 60s in Europe, in the Middle East, and literally rode a motorcycle 50,000 kilometers going from city to city, country to country, to promote this idea of, folks, we got to wake up. We've destroyed our soil. And so they did a summit in Jordan, in the Middle East, and it's very powerful. They have, ministers of education, ministers, the government ministers of in the arena of agriculture and such. And it's a very powerful presentation. And he also does some good stuff around, functioning as a human being. So if anybody's interested in that topic, take a look. Just, go into YouTube and type in Satguru Soil, and you'll see several things, but the one in Jordan is really excellent.
Well, that's great. I've heard of him, and I admire him so much for doing that. For quite a long time, every day I would post something about the environment, helping, how you could help this or that, but I stopped it after about 2 years. Maybe I shouldn't have stopped it, but
well, maybe
yeah,
it's time to go back and recoup those posts and start posting them again.
Gee, I wonder if they're still around. Maybe. Yeah.
They're still there. Yeah, you can go back and share them.
So one of my worksheets was on a next-door neighbor who's on the opposite side of the universe as far as political allegiance or whatever it is, and we I might have talked about this on the radio show. We made our backyard last year into a grow zone because it's totally secluded. We have everything trimmed up in front, but the back was growing wild for the bees and the butterflies and so forth. And
right.
She finally told me that she and a bunch of neighbors were disgusted with me. She didn't say it that way. She just said, first she said, she called me and said, I'm thinking of putting up a fence between our yards. And I said, well, sure, if you want to. I mean, we've got lots of shrubs there and trees, and but go ahead if you want to. And then I said, is there a reason? And because it didn't even occur to me that this might be. He said, well, I don't like your backyard the way it is. And, you know, the city could get after you. And I said, oh, gosh. And then she said, and we've had complaints from neighbors, which sort of surprised me because why didn't they talk to us? But they talked to her. Evidently, there was some, you know, behind the fences or something. So we mowed it all down. And this year,
ouch,
the shrubs between us, I know, and this year, the she didn't put up a fence, but there's literal block of fencing in the way of trees between our yards. Our yard is not visible to her yard except from a balcony off the second floor, and they do go out there. So I wrote to her this year, and I said, we're going to do it again, and here are the reasons. And I gave her my environmental pitch, and I said,
right,
we're not trying to be obnoxious, but, you know, we were just with lawns, and they pour pesticides. You talked about Roundup. They use it all over there, and they're a corner property, and there's a lot of Roundup going in there. So I just explained to her about what I was doing, and then I went away to Florida. I hadn't heard anything from her, and I thought, oh, good, maybe it's okay. Well, finally, I got a note from her. It wasn't a note. It was an attachment, city ordinance. You're not allowed to grow your grass beyond 10 inches or something. But I had called the city, and they said, oh, it's fine if it's not on a thoroughfare or an alleyway, as long as a neighbor doesn't complain. I thought, well, there you go. So I wrote back to her, and I said, I know this is legal, but I guess, you know, no, I didn't do that. I showed it to Tim, trying to remember the chronology. I showed it to Tim, and he said, yeah, she's got us. If there's a complaint, we have to cut it. He's a lawyer, and he just said so. So I wrote back to her, and I said, all right, when I come home, I'll get my son to bring out the big machine and mow it down. And he did. On Sunday, Jonathan mowed the entire thing down. And I did worksheets on her because I was so angry. And that's partly a question for you. You have very strong feelings about wildlife, animals, the soil, political stuff. And you're probably invited to be triggered, but you probably aren't because you've done enough work that you can see what's needed, but you remain centered and okay, and I'm not able to do that very well. I have to do worksheets every time. So,
well, I do have occasions where my frustration comes up, and I'll mutter under my breath about the insanity of what, you know, of what people put out and what people are believing of the lies that are put forward. But here's a thought, and I thought about doing this here. I just watched this particular piece. I mean, I've been a soil advocate for decades. You know, we worked at it at Heartland and such, and doing, you know, proper soil care and management. And we've got a friend who actually is writing soil legislation for the state of Illinois. And she runs a nonprofit that is about rescuing prairies and restoring prairies to the original state because of the destruction that's taken place. But I've thought about seeing if I can rent a theater here in town, a movie theater, and do a showing of Satguru's video on soil. Because, you know, I think many people just don't have a clue. You know, they're on, as I started the show, it's automatic pilot. Oh, well, this is the way it's supposed to be. I've got a little story that I tell about God discovering what humans are doing to the earth. I'll print that off and share it with you on the show next week when we get back. But you know, maybe you could set up and do a community service thing or through the church or, you know, it's just, in a lot of cases, I think it's just pure awareness and people just don't know. Oh, it's supposed to be, you know, only 2 inches high and blah, 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 blah. And it's supposed to be covered with grass and, oh, those things that, you know, bees go to. I mean, who wants those in their yard? It's like, we do. we've gone out and collected them and planted them. You know, the bee habitat, you know, with all the bee destructions that has happened over the years. And I understand in the last year they're talking about something, I forget what the number is, some outrageous percentage, 30 or 40% of bees in this last year alone, the population's been reduced on a global scale, they're saying. That's like, I mean, that is tragic. And definitely wake up time.
Well, yeah. And even hearing you talk, I'm having to do deep breathing, and I'm thinking, there are my next 5 worksheets. This is getting old. It's just, and with this woman, I was able to worksheet my way out of anger and write to her and just say, okay, we'll mow it down. I hear you. We'll mow it down when we get home. And I was okay, but my son came by with his big mower from up the hill, and that emits a lot of gas, too. I mean, a lot of pollution from the gas. Tons.
Right.
Anyway, he had to use it. He had to weed whack because it was so high, and then he used the mower. And as he was doing it, he saw them come out on their balcony, and he said, I'm going to say something to them. And I got paralyzed. I said, don't say anything. I live next door to them. I just cannot have an ugly relationship with my neighbors. It's, you know, it's worth, that's worth something to me,
there's
too.
A good
and
word
so
for you.
He didn't. What?
Here's a good worksheet topic. Being able to communicate to neighbors and with neighbors lovingly, gently, and respectfully where there are differences of opinion.
Don't
you know,
worry,
to be able
Michael.
To
I'm
do
doing
that.
Them.
Yeah, cool.
I'm doing
Sweet.
Them. Yeah. I mean, she wrote back to me while I was still down there. I said, okay, we'll come and cut it down. She wrote back and she said, I don't mean to be a bad neighbor. You've been a good neighbor, and we like you, and I think bullshit. But anyway, she says, we like you and we want us to get along. And, you know, we're worried about mosquitoes and ticks and things like that. And we had to get rid of a little pond we have in our backyard because it was breeding mosquitoes. And we have these 2 dogs and they're not, we don't give them flea meds because they don't spend much time. All this reasoning she was giving me. And I wrote back and said, you know, thank you so much for writing, and I'll be home soon, and yes, I definitely want to be getting along with you, and that's very important. And I thought it was done with, Michael, but when I was going, I just felt as if my heart was being ripped out. All these beautiful wildflowers and the bees had been buzzing around in there. They're not living in there, but they're definitely. So I just had to do more worksheets on it. But it's just, I'm on a rant too, but I'm also asking you how you stay okay when things don't seem to be okay.
Well, I can be, you can be in a space of centered and see that there's something off base that needs to be dealt with. It's just, you know, what's the automatic pilot of my generational patterns for dealing with those things? Do I deal with them through communication? Do I deal with them by keeping the love present in my mind, or do I deal with them by going into hostility, control, fear, you know, all the games of the generations? And every circumstance or situation like that is just another opportunity to do another piece of work and move forward. That'd be my take.
Yep.
And what I can't bring a gentle mind connected to love to is my work.
Yeah.
And because I can't bring a gentle, loving mind to something doesn't mean I need to put up with it either. So it's, you know, it's a process for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep clearing out the layers and the, you know, and looking underneath at what the real energetic pattern is, where there's conflict and, you know, going into a fit of rage over it and thinking like that's normal. I mean, when you think about it, that's bizarre that a human being that's designed to function as love has this fit of rage and creates all this disturbance in their physiology, all this toxic waste within their own structures. They suffer from it, but it's been, you know, in our culture, it's been thought of as normal, and it's anything but normal. And that's why we're here to introduce the work. And, you know, it's gone on for so many generations with, you know, the good people all went to church, but they never knew it was about facing their own hostility and fear and dealing with it.
Yeah. Well, so I don't go into a rage, but I do want to, I am critical and judgmental. I just get, I have feelings about people like that. I do that. So that's probably rage. I'm just muted in this.
Yeah, well, remember that you could stop at, I have feelings. Remember, feelings are internal. They're internally generated. Mm-hmm. They're not about anything other than what's going on inside of you. And if they're feelings that aren't based in love, that's your work to do. They seem to be caused by what's going on out there, but really there's always that underlying dynamic that needs to be dealt with.
Well, I think they are. I thought you were going to say that.
Breathing with you.
It just seems insurmountably difficult to me. I get cooped. I want to go.
Well, when you're the early adopter. When you're the early adopter, you know, if you think about how many people in your immediate community and family system have chosen to consciously, purposely function as love and to take responsibility for and remove everything that's unlike love. Like, how many people can you name in your environment, in your life, that have ever said, oh, here's what I'm doing with my life? Got anybody? I never had. There's one place I can remember that I did have, actually. My mom. One of the things I can remember as a kid, and I was sharing this with Jeannie recently, is whenever an ambulance went by, whenever a fire truck would go by, Mom would always bow her head. And she'd invite us as kids to do the same and send prayer, you know, what she called prayer, to those who were in difficulty. But other than that,
that's
I never
lovely.
Saw it.
Wow. That's lovely. That's beautiful. Okay. Well, God.
Yeah, it brings up some tender, just thinking about it brings up some very tender feelings for me at this moment.
I think so, yeah. That's a beautiful little story. Wow. Well, we'll be thinking of you as you travel.
Thank you. Much appreciation. We've got some miles to cover. We're going to get to hug our two granddaughters probably sometime tomorrow afternoon. And then we'll be on to wedding time in St. Louis, or pardon me, in Kansas City.
That's wonderful.
And then we're going to circle back to Heartland and do a little work there and get back to Bristol. So we're down to the last minute or so.
Yeah,
I'm planning. I think it's going to be. Yeah, we're ready to rock and roll.
Good.
All right. Well, you have a blessed day and lots of love, everybody.
Thanks
for joining
you
us.
Too.
And blessings. Bye bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.